You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
As the man said, you are live on LA Talk Radio. This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and welcome to my couch, as you always are on Wednesdays, now at 12 noon Pacific Standard Time, and everywhere around the world, wherever you're at in your time zone. Welcome. And today, as always, I have a really great guest with me. He's an amazing author, an artist of so many different mediums, and we're going to talk to him basically about the concepts revolving around karma. Yeah, I mean, I've not really had many guests talking about karma in a long time. So let me introduce you to him, and then we'll bring him up live on the air, and we're just going to talk about his amazing book. It is a novel, right? So it's a fiction novel, but I have a feeling that there's a lot of concepts in there that have some nonfiction in there pertaining to his life as well. So let's bring him up. And raised in Connecticut, his name is Thomas Lane. You've heard of him before, I'm sure. He's an amazing author. He's a multidimensional creative drawn to spaces where art, spirit, and social justice interact and intersect all together. He's the author of The Artist's Manifesto, which is a tribute to the power of the arts, its value to society, and that has forgotten the precious nature of life. And now we're talking about his book. It's called The Karma Factor. So Thomas Lane, welcome to the couch with me. Hi.
Well, thank you very much. It's very comfortable on that couch.
Oh, good. I'm so glad. Well, I try to make it as comfortable as I can.
You do a great
job.
Happy
day. Oh, thank you so much. So thank you, by the way, for providing this book for us. This is really cool. I really enjoyed it. And just to sort of set it up here, I'm just kind of going to say exactly what it says here on the sleeve, because I don't want to have any spoiler alerts here. So the book Karma Factor is a work of visionary fiction exploring the boundaries of human consciousness against the backdrop of a classic suspense thriller with a purpose that transcends the genre. Lane expertly weaves the novel's wider messages in a groundbreaking white-knuckle ride between worlds as characters set out to make karmic amendments, right wrongs, and reestablish the power of choice. That is heavy. Now, that drew me in, Thomas. That right away, I went, oh my God, I have to read this.
Good.
So let's just start out in your words to share with the audience. What do you mean by the karma factor? What does that mean?
Well, it's a sort of a mystical note, or something that is formless that you can't see. It is a force in nature and in human development. And it goes unnoticed often because the fingerprints are so indelible, but also so invisible, that the motives for things, it could be, well, you know, Sally was mean to me, and so I'll be mean to her. But it actually may go back and back to earlier times, to connection, to things that are quite different, but somehow are getting confused in the particular moment in time. So you're dramatizing something that is really beyond a kind of an ordinary or normal expected response. Uh-huh. And it's something that it takes a lot of courage to be accountable for, you know, the burdens that we carry around as we deal with relationships and life in general. I don't know if that makes it more cloudy to you or explains it, but it's a really, really interesting and important phenomena to work on, I have found.
You know, I think as in your story that you wrote, The Karma Factor, I think what you're referring to, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that things sometimes don't turn out the way you expected or intended them to. And I'm not just saying, oh, wow, I won the lottery, that kind of thing, or, you know, whatever, got the girl or whatever. But you give an example in your book where to me, in my mind, right, it was like a Matrix-like scene in your book. That's where the detective, the gentleman who's Detective James Early, right?
Yeah.
He decides to suicide by making himself an easy target by taunting this armed suspect into a blind fury. So he knew this guy was going to shoot him. So he's taunting this guy. This is kind of like a suicide by a crazy person that, you want to kill you. So the bullets, however, like in the Matrix, right? With Neo, the bullets fired at him point blank are mysteriously diverted. So that's what you're talking about, the karma factor. It's like, wait a minute. It's cognitive dissonance. I can't make sense of what went on here. So is that what you're talking about? So, okay.
Causes very and effect are hard to often don't seem to piece together or offer the explanation. In the scene you're talking about, the bullets are diverted so that he can live again. But what that does is send him on a quest, this detective who is suddenly, he's ready to give up. He thinks he's going crazy. He thinks he's being a destructive element in the world. And as a cop, he's not doing his job. And then all of a sudden, his life is saved. And then he is forced to look at the question, well, if my life has been saved, for what? For why? And that launches him on a whole other quest that never would have happened if that incident hadn't happened.
Ah, okay. So his quest is to find out what is this, what is this magical thing, or what is this strange thing that has allowed me to stay alive, and what do I need to know through my journey to stay alive? And, I guess I'm here for a reason, right?
Yeah. Well, he, instead of ending his life, he actually began his life by being thrown off balance there and having to self-correct because something magical, mysterious happened to him. Right. That he now needs to find out why. He is now galvanized to do some self-inspection and some work, and this turns a whole series of events that never would have happened if he had just been, oh, phew, I lived and just let it be. But no, he inspected. He dug deep. So this launched him onto a whole other thing.
Right. It's fascinating when you think about the karma factor, as you describe in your book, but there are a lot of movies that have been done and a lot of stories that have been written about changing timelines, right? We always look back and think sometimes, what if I hadn't have done this, or what if I hadn't have met this person, or what if I hadn't have taken that train or been on the freeway at that time? What if? And we were always going, what if? What would have happened? Yeah. But we never know. I mean, this is kind of like the quest, of your protagonist. What if, oh my God, it didn't happen. I didn't die. I didn't. So there's always this thing that we look back at and say, what would have happened if I didn't, maybe I would have had a better life. I think that's where a lot of people go to, in my experience,
Yeah, no, it's true. And, you have the freedom of choice. When you look at what might have happened, what didn't happen, what couldn't happen, could have happened. And what this guy does is because he was primed for this other level of awareness, and it was being sort of coded by his life in New York and cops and robbers and bad guys, and that his spirituality was not being looked at. And so he has this moment where he's got his face in it. He's pushed into, this thing happened. And instead of going, well, it could have been this, it could have been that, it's just, it happened. Where do we go from here? And there's that freedom that you're trying to get to. So you choose, you know, you choose a better way than being caught in the loop of what you normally do.
Yes, yes, that's really true. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. And it's awesome the way you weave that into the story. And by the way, in case you just tuned in, guys, you're here on the couch with me, Dr. Michelle. My special guest today is Thomas Lane, and he has written a really great novel. It's called The Karma Factor. It's a monk's timeless vision, an assassin's revenge, a New York cop caught in the middle. You should write this screenplay and have it done into a movie, Thomas. I'm serious. It was great.
Oh, thank you. I did sign an option deal for film and TV. We'll see how long, you know, that stays out there. But it's a very visual book, I think, and perhaps would do well as a movie.
Right, The Karma Factor, beautiful. It's really amazing, and it keeps you real. I love your writing. You're such a good writer. It just keeps you hanging
on. Thank you.
You're welcome. So, you know, I think that it's important also to talk about what are some of the truths about karma did your character learn along the way in your novel?
Well, it's really interesting, and, you know, I am no expert on this. I have done a lot of thinking, a lot of inspecting, using myself as sort of the guinea pig, and what does this mean to me? The thing that, well, there's a lot of things that I love about entertaining the possibility of having lived before is that, you know, your spiritual DNA may have come from a lot of different places. It's almost like our physical DNA, which has supposedly come from Africa, but then went over to Israel and so forth and so on in terms of genetics. But what if you were a woman in a past lifetime? What if you were even a Democrat one lifetime and a Republican the next lifetime? And what if you were black or white or all these things that are divisive? And you begin to see you are all of these things, and your identity stretches out across all these various things. And if people understood that better, we might get along better. There's just that whole perception of past lifetimes. In terms of karma, the best I can come up with is that there are forces at play. Some of them have to do with, you know, what has happened in the past is what, and what needs to be worked on is magnetized. As you go through life, you'll find out that the problem areas may get resurfaced and repeated over and over and again until you make your peace with those things. And it isn't such a, and it's a long range thing. It could be, you know, hundreds of lifetimes. We don't know, but, possibility that if someone does terror hit, well, like Hitler, say, well, he would come back as a cockroach. Well, because you know, as punishment, right? You know, for the bad deeds he's done, and there are a few others that belong in that category, which I won't mention at this point. But it's important to know that what you're seeing in one lifetime could be just a snapshot, and it doesn't take in the whole breadth that you've been. Terrible, you've been wonderful, you've been good, you've been bad. So, you know, people seem to get away with evil stuff. Well, if you believe in karma, then they won't. But it may not happen right away. It may happen three lifetimes later or, you know, or even in within this lifetime. In my humble opinion, things do come around. What goes around does come around. That's why we are living so many different, you know, we come back again and again to work this stuff out. That's my take.
Right. Interesting stuff. And I'm not sure. I mean, I know what you're saying about Hitler coming back as a cockroach, but I think certain evil people in our humanity need to come back as conscious beings not a cockroach, because I don't know if they have the consciousness to get their message. You know, cockroach isn't going to go, oh crap, I'm, you know, I was just squished and died. They're going to come back again. But I think, I don't know. I believe that perhaps we do come back. And I think you agree with me on this, to learn, you know, and we won't remember. I mean, that's the perplexing thing that I, that I've grappled with in terms of why we keep coming back. And from all of the people I've interviewed and read who have to do with not necessarily even karma, but, you know, the concept of learning what you need to learn and whatever that journey is you need to complete. I've done a lot of work with Dolores Cannons. I don't know if you know of her. She's written 20 books. She was very famous. Hypnotherapist, very famous for years. She did past life regressions in her hypnotherapy. So what she did was record all of her sessions. And she, of course, got authorization from her, you know, patients or whatever she called them, to record these people just reliving their pasts. And it's like, oh my God, I'm wearing this, I'm doing this, I'm fighting in here. And so much of what they're telling her has been researched that these other people did exist in the past, or there was this timeline where other people did experience these things in history, or this is, you know, so it's fascinating stuff. So I totally am into it. So have you ever
I believe that, and I think there are people doing research now that will be able to really have some solid kinds of evidence, you know, that are more than just personal experiences. It's just an open field that needs to be explored.
Right. And there are, you know, there are a lot of people who, you know, can go into that meditative state or whatever to call to them memories, whether it's a gamma state or whatever state that is, you know, where they can, you know, sort of call things and have these flashes.
Yeah. You know. Dr. Michelle, have you had experiences with this?
I have. Once, several years ago, I was hypnotized by a person out here in Los Angeles who was a psychologist, and he was a specialist in past life regression. I thought, oh, this will be fun. What the heck? Might as well try it. So I did go back. I did go down, as I call it, into a relaxed state, and I started to have some flashes. They were flashes of me being like in the Renaissance period of myself, full color visions with music. I was dancing and I was in, it looked like, I don't know, looked like kind of like a Renoir painting, you know?
Oh, nice. Nice.
And so I was there and I saw the dress. It was red. Then I flashed on being in on a stage in an old theater. Old theater.
Wow. Wow.
I don't even know what year it was. I was, I guess, acting or singing. And I remember getting off the stage and walking down the aisles and looking, you know, the old seats, old wooden seats with red, like velvet on them. So that was kind of cool. But I don't know if I created that, because a lot of people say, well, we're very creative when we're in a hypnotic state. So we can fabricate things, you know, based on things that we enjoy. Like I love Renoir paintings and I love the Renaissance paintings and I love all, you know, that and the literature and all that stuff. So I've always been into that. So did my subconscious want to bring that forward to make me live that? You know, so I always have questions about that. But yeah, thanks for asking.
Yeah, that's the tricky navigational area. I totally get what you're saying.
Yeah, I think, but it was fun, whether I created it or not for fun. It was, and then I kept popping out because I have a very busy frontal lobe.
I was thinking, yeah, right? They call it high beta. That does not have anything to do with intelligence. It means that you're always thinking thoughts, you know, you're always going, what if, or analyzing. And you have to be fully relaxed and fully trusting when you're going down into, you know, any kind of hypnosis or hypnotic state, allowing that person.
Yeah.
So I kept questioning myself when I'd really feel an experience that I was back in the Renaissance. My frontal lobe, you know, my high beta would go, yeah, but you're creating this. And then he'd calm me down.
Right.
So anyway.
Yeah, there's for me, and this is going to sound perhaps strange, but, you know, I had, like many people, I had a difficult family, and I was sort of losing my way as a young kid. And the thing that popped me out, and that started me on the whole spiritual alternative universe type thing, was when my fourth grade teacher read The Hobbit out loud to the class.
Right? Yeah.
You know? And it was interesting because just recently I had the thought, oh, I get it, because what that meant to me is that there's other ways other than this, our kind of Newtonian world of hardship and, you know, the laws and consequences that we're all used to. But something that is popped out of that, that was the first time I felt that an alternative reality was possible and viable. And actually important to have, rather than kind of a hypnotic spell of you can only, you know, go into this area and that area, and the mind will kick up. Oh, don't go there. Oh, that's your ego or whatever it happens to kick up. But you know, that was really a big point for me.
And how old were you?
I would have been 9 years old.
Wow, you started early on your journey of discovery. That's
I didn't know it was a journey until I look back on it. But yeah, I suppose so.
Yeah. So in your particular experience, have you seen people or known people to confirm that there is karma? In other words, in your life or around you, or certain, I don't even want to get into the political thing, or certain figures where they have not been the best people to other people. So you've seen karma sort of kick them in the butt?
Well, I saw it in my family. And it was surrounded by PhDs, Harvard, Yale, Bryn Mawr, Columbia. And then there was me. The promise that was there amongst these people, the four of us that that grew up together, my parents, my brother, and myself. There was so much strength and brilliance and whatever, and yet these people, like all of us, were embattled personally and struggling and having a hard time. And I really felt like that it was an important set of relationships that I had to work out.
Right.
Karmically, I mean, I wasn't thinking that back then, but that this was sort of testing ground for me to learn about them and to resolve certain things, and that I had known them before. That came later. But important karma for me to deal with and to look at, you know, and maybe that's why it ended up in a book called The Karma Factor, because it's about karma. It's not a story with karma. It's a story about karma, which makes it slightly different.
Yes, it does. It's a really good book, by the way. And if you'd like to check it out, get a hold of it. Here it is, The Karma Factor. And you can find it anywhere, folks. It's, you know, get it on Amazon if you like. Or also, folks can go to your website as well, right, Thomas?
Oh, yeah. We just finished it the other day. Publication date was yesterday. So we're newborn babes out into the world on Amazon, whatever. And beautiful. Please, we spent a lot of time trying to get all these elusive parts of me organized into a few pages. But it's thomaslane.com.
Thomaslane.com.
That's the website.
Sounds good. You know, you mentioned just a little while ago the concept about working things through with your family of origin in this particular life. You said, well, we all kind of figured it out, or I figured it out, that we knew each other before. So are you saying that we come back to whatever families or situations with people that we knew in a past life to work things out? Is that what you're saying?
It's a supposition. It just seems that if, and according to many of the wise people I've read and talked to, that the human challenge is to repair from the past and to work towards what one might call a native state as a spirit. And so it would make sense to me practically that if this is an intention that's alive and not buried, and I do believe it gets buried frequently, deeply, and it's hard to find again. But if you're there, then keeping one's awareness about this is what is really going on, this trying to find the love in there, and work from that, but also be understanding when it's not love and it's upset and all that kind of stuff. But that's really a purpose, at least for me, and that's my truth, that I'm here to work things out, and so that I can move forward. Einstein said a brilliant thing, which is that you can't solve a problem from the same state in which you created the problem.
Right.
That's interesting to me. And that means to me that also, if I want to contribute and to truly contribute, that I need to evolve into better states than I have been, so that I can then be more effective with being helpful.
Yes, absolutely. So through different, perhaps, incarnations, we strive to evolve as higher beings, as you might say, to learn that, you know, we're all connected, talking about Einstein, all connected in the quantum world, I guess we're all connected, and the universal consciousness, and that the goal here is to achieve a place where you can perhaps lower your own ego needs, as we are in this 3D body a lot of times, which is normal. Sort of see the best person we can be, and then see the best for humankind, or what can we contribute to humankind in this particular lifetime. Is that where you're sort of going with this?
Yes, and it sounds like you're there. You're talking from your own heart.
Working on it. That's my, you know.
Indeed. Long ways to go.
We're all, I guess, on a journey, and we're all learning things. And you know, I think it's our mindset that we all have to get into as well. And I'm sure you would agree with me, being the spiritual guy that you are, and especially writing this book, The Karma Factor. You know, it's, we do the best we can with what we have, and hopefully along our journeys in these bodies at this time, we get that. But we try to a little bit better ourselves, or understand, you know, and one of the things, especially in your book, that I really like too, is the characters not really asking outwardly, but there's intonations in it of what do I need to learn from this? What do I need to know from this? Right?
So, and those that are not doing that, like our bad boy serial killer in this particular thing.
Right.
He's working something out. Hello?
I'm right here.
Oh, okay. I don't want to do a spoiler here, but he is like many people, and all of us to a certain degree, he's playing out the recording in his head that is telling him what to do and what he should do and what he shouldn't do. And so he is deeply inside this circle of things that his revenge basically, that is compelling him, that has compelled him through numerous lifetimes, let's say, and that he needs to take the needle off the record so it doesn't keep playing. And that is our detective's job, isn't it? He's come to the conclusion that, as they say, nail in jail or jail and nail criminals is not going to do anything, because ultimately they'll come back and do it again. If unless they are changing their inner structures and inner work. So hopefully that this is his mission. This is the detective's mission. And this is the challenge of the whole book, is that how, and he's in a race against the police catching this guy also, because the police will put him in jail and they'll hang him or whatever. So that's not going to do it. So anyway, it's I better shut up, otherwise I'll give away the ending.
Well, you're just giving us a taste, so that's good. I love it. But yeah, he's on his own quest to find out, you know, exactly why this guy did this or why this guy is like he is and what put him in this situation to be able to dodge those bullets. He didn't really dodge them. The bullets dodged him.
Yeah.
Kind of like that scene with Neo in The Matrix, that famous scene where he's bending back, slow-mo, and all the bullets are racing around.
Yeah, but, amazing.
I love that. I think that's so cool. So who are some of the people in your life, in your studies? You know, you mentioned, I believe, The Hobbit, that story and that whole thing. Who are some of the, you know, writers and spiritual and inspirational people have influenced you in your life?
Oh, it's just so many. Yogananda. Was important, and in terms of past lifetimes as well, he was my first main guy. Before that, and in my Hobbit years, there was a guy, I barely remember his name, who was very, very into Tolkien and all that stuff, and then he also got into sensory deprivation and how if you could just not. And he did it. He practiced it himself. He lay in a darkened room. He ate unsalted nuts. This is when I was about 14. And then he would, you know, he did that for a whole bunch of time. And then he would go out into the world. And he was saying, oh, my God, the grass, the smell of it is so amazing. He was so alive and he was so sensitized. That made a profound effect on me also about kind of what was possible. Just to experience life in that intense way.
Yes.
So he was an important character. Krishnamurti, a lot of the Indian guys, and then just other folks through the years. I learn things from my wife every day, and from so many. Adi Ashanti has been helpful. Right. It just multitudes.
Oh, that's beautiful. I love that. And you know, you mentioned Paramahansa Yogananda, and he is, you lived out here, you were out here before, so you've been to the Lake Shrine, right?
Yep.
Okay. So for those of you who don't know, there's this beautiful shrine, beautiful lake, beautiful temple, little tiny church, little boat on a lake where Paramahansa Yogananda spent a lot of his time and dedicated a lot of funds to creating this beautiful sanctuary for people to come for free and meditate. And it's so beautiful. I was there about a month ago. And,
really?
You know, yeah, it changes. It's almost like the deprivation thing in a way, but you're not taking away anything from your senses. You're walking into, that paradise.
Mm-hmm.
Shrine and that lake and the swans and the trees, and everybody's in that mellow mindset. So you're going through a trail, and it's just beautiful. So I know what you're saying about that. I have a cold, so forgive me.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
It's okay. I may be losing my voice. So, if you can tell us a little bit more about your experiences that have helped you. Can you
Where to even begin? I you know the story of this book, it started 20 something years ago. I have found that for me, having a vehicle, something that I'm passionate about and something I'm really connected to, that is sort of the tip of the arrow that allows me to focus on one thing, stay with it no matter what, push it through no matter what are the hardships and whatever. And
Yes.
I found this in this little book of mine way back when it started out as a sort of, well, it actually started out with the idea of a credit card. It was just an idea. I had, well, a credit card that would have good karma, bad karma on it. And you would sort of add up little figures. Oh, I was mean to that person, whatever. It was just a little thought I had. And then I found out about the Akashic Records and
Oh,
what that
yes.
was, as database of past lifetimes. And supposedly you could, if you could really tune in, you could find out what you had for breakfast in 1412, and who you murdered in 1701, and who you fell in love with in 27 BC. All the It's such an amazing concept, and the idea was, well, what if that became an expanded profile in terms of a cop trying to find a killer, about using all that information in the past, about what this guy's likely to do, what, and ultimately what pattern of behavior they're caught up in that you would allow you to anticipate where the crime is going to go. And so I wrote this sort of comical novella, and it was sort of like a Columbo, sort of slightly humorous, raincoated detective, but very, sort of gruff spiritual guy. And then that tra then I had written another book called The Artist Manifesto, which
Why?
was my attempt to all the talk I had heard, hanging out with other artists and myself had experienced, backstage waiting for a concert or in a gallery or in a coffee shop, talking about the power of the arts and why they were, being sort of hampered by lawyers and money people and all this stuff. And so I wrote that, and somebody, and Roseanne Barr happened to read that. This is way back when.
That's great.
And she said, oh, I love this book. And then I tried to get a meeting with her. Didn't happen, didn't happen. And then I gave them my little, I called it the karma files, sort of like the, what was it, the other files. What was that TV? Oh, the X Files. And they flipped out over it, and I went over to Roseanne Barr's house, and she introduced me to the Warner Brothers people, and we were going to make a TV show, and blah 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 blah. Then it fell apart, and then it got signed to another movie deal thing, and then through the years, it's been, well, the book will come out when the movie comes out, and this and that. We thought we have it together. It didn't come together, and finally, and I found that I was very reluctant about pushing it and getting it out there. This is what I told you about the my little phrase of passive ambitious, which is, for instance, I love rock and roll, but I don't feel comfortable in the scene of rock and roll, of four guys in a room and doing everything and only rock and roll to get out there. It's just not for me. But it's, when I got to this point and the book hadn't come out, and it was people had read it and responded well to it. And I decided to stay with it and publish it myself, and which became something that is now a hybrid publisher, which is kind of like splitting the publishing responsibilities between myself and them, and staying with it, and all the things that have come up that I've had to deal with, that, but the decision to, it's a clarion call moment for all of us right now, and it's all hands on deck, whichever deck we might be manning up, And it might be smiling more to the postman. It might be going out there with picket signs and activism and whatever it is. And this area was my little contribution, this book and music and the other stuff I've done. So, you know, that's a long way of just saying that using this book, which is really about an alternative reality, which is what started with The Hobbit way back when, and I have just clung to it as the world seems to be unraveling, and it's been all the karma stuff, not all of it, but a bunch of stuff has showed up that I had to deal with it, and I welcome it at this point. And here I am talking to you. Who knew? You know, a year ago, you couldn't have paid me enough money to get out into the world with this thing. And now it's like, bring it on. We all have to do something more. Anyway, so that's my little story about the karma factor.
No, that's beautifully said. I think we do. And excuse my voice, because I've been fighting this cold for a while. So I'm doing the best I can here to finish up the show. But no, I think exactly what you said is beautiful, to get out, because there are so many changes going on in consciousness right now that we need to be aware of. This is the time. And I know people have said about the past, you know, oh, this is the time in history that everything's changing. Well, everything's always changing.
Yeah.
So
this,
though, is especially with our, you know, in regards to our environment and the consciousness.
Yes.
Of that,
yes.
And the consciousness. Warring nations and warring leaders and good and evil, and that whole thing is playing itself out. And I think it's brilliant, because we are now active and socially interactive, aware.
I totally agree. And it's interesting, because there's so much about lying and the big lies and all that stuff. But what's also happening is the big truths, is that people are coming forward, like, you know, Me Too, Black Lives Matter, all the issues that have been dormant, including racism and dictatorship, all that stuff. It's all exploding on the surface right now. It's an honest moment. And that says something. That means that there's an opportunity as well.
I agree. It really does. So, again, if you'd like to check out Thomas's book, it's amazing. And here it is. It's a great story. It's called The Karma Factor. Learn a little bit more about your own karma and what you might do to understand. Perhaps maybe you were here before, and what you need to learn in this incarnation, I guess. And you can check it out at Thomas's website, thomaslane.com. Very easy, thomaslane.com. Of course, you can get the book anywhere on Amazon or anywhere you prefer to buy your books. But Thomas, you've been a great guest, and thank you so much for being here to share your wisdom with us.
Oh, well, thanks for giving me a space on the couch, and all anybody who's listening out there, good luck. God bless. It's a tough time, but your voice is important. So speak up.
Yes, exactly. Speak up and be the best. I guess, as I always say at the end of my show, you know, take care of yourself first, and then you'll be good for others. But you, like you said, focus well. Really get to know who you are, and look for some of the signs as to why things happen to you, and maybe learn from what you could have done to prevent certain negative things, and how you can just be a sort of a better person, I guess, to others out there in the world, right?
Sounds good to me.
All right. Keep up your writing and your amazing art, by the way. Check him out.
Thank you so much.
All righty, Thomas. Take good care. Thanks for joining.
All right. Bye-bye. Thanks again for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. It's been great. All right, guys, as I say, and as I said, do take care of yourself first, and then you'll be great for others. This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and I'm apologizing for my cold here. It's getting a little wonky, so that's perfect timing. I'm going to hop off the air. I'll talk to you next Wednesday, 12 p.m. PT. Have a good one. Take care. Bye.
You've You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.